Hello again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live daily afternoon call and talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. About 70 bus drivers in Chittenden County, Vermont, are in the second week of a strike. Negotiations ended abruptly this weekend when drivers' union officials walked out of a meeting with the Chittenden County Transportation Agency officials. Among other issues, the drivers are disputing the agency's policy of taking disciplinary action from its anonymous complaint system, and drivers argue it's unfair, while CCTA officials say it's in place for the safety of riders. Well, forget about that. It's not only Chittenden County we're talking about. It's only one example. American workers have been unionizing for over 200 years now, yet union membership is down almost 10 percentage points from 30 years ago. According to the most recent Bureau of Labor Statistics, why do you think that is? Are more people troubled by unions? Give us a call at 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Love to hear from you. There are already three people on the phone. This is going to be a hot one, folks. There'll be a hot time in the old town tonight. I have to say, by way of disclosure, that, you know, I was a longtime union member at SUNY and the professors' union. Then also at Channel 13, where I worked, where I was a member of the union there. At the union there, unlike the union at SUNY, I got a jacket and a hat. Okay, so let's go to John in Rock Tavern, New York. Okay, John, you're on. What do you have
to say?
Hey,
Alan.
Hey, good to talk to you.
I'm actually heading to White Plains, so I'm at a disadvantage. I lost your signal, and I don't know if I'll be able to pick it up on another translator down here, but I just figured I'd make a quick comment.
Okay.
And that is that it seems like unions have gotten a bad reputation because folks tend to paint them with a wide swath, and people don't realize there's a difference between a public sector union, a building trade union, and some other sort of amalgamated union that's in between. And fortunately, I work for a union in which we not only advocate for the workers in our own shop, but also for workers in general. And so it's a severe struggle right now because we often get painted as sort of a myopic group that's only focused on our own members and we only want what we want for ourselves and so forth.
Yeah.
But the truth of the matter is, the better unions do, the better that all the middle class does. And it's indisputable economically that that's what happens. Except that, you know, we don't have all the money. So the people who have the money, who can control the public discourse, are the ones who can really control what a lot of people think.
Well, you know, unions tend, as you say, to be stereotyped. You know, you get the idea of the guy with the hat on, you know, and crouched down and making a lot of money and driving around with a Cadillac with a big fat cigar in his face, and that's really not fair. But it's the kind of thing that, you know, sort of is around. No.
Yeah, I remember during the debates over the Employee Free Choice Act that there were lots of folks who would say, well, you know, you're taking away the right of the employee himself to vote for a union or not.
Yeah.
And
closed shop stuff. Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
The other side of that debate is that presently under U.S. law, it's not the right of the employee or the union to have an election, but it's the right of the employer. So why is that better?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. We know that great stuff has happened as a result of the unions. No two ways about it. My mother thought Albert Shanker, she was a teacher, Albert Shanker was a god, and absolutely thought that there were ways in which, you know, unions, I mean, for example, in charter schools where there can be unions and there can't be unions depending on where they are. I know a guy who's working 12 hours a day. 12 hours a day, gets there 7, leaves at 7. I mean, that's a lot of time. So, you know, and he does it. He needs the job. He needs the work. He goes to work and he takes it. He sort of eats it. But then there's on the other side, there's the question of whether unions have made it difficult, for example, to fire somebody who really deserves to be fired. So those are some of the issues.
Yeah, it's a very common example. And I think that everybody would say, no matter if you're pro-union or not, everybody would say that you should only be for an example, arrested if you've committed a crime.
Yep.
And you should only be fired if you've actually broken some rule.
Why? What if there's, you're not just, you're marginal and you're really not doing a good job, but you haven't broken a rule. You just stink. Why shouldn't that person be fired?
Well, when you get fired on the job, that's within the world of employment. That's right.
Yeah.
You might work for a place for 10 years, and you may become marginal. Maybe you're not keeping up with technology. Maybe you got a crappy boss. Maybe you're getting in the middle of a divorce. I mean, there could be lots of different extenuating reasons. So should the person who is your supervisor simply have the power of the guillotine?
Well, but yes, no, you're right. You're right, of course. But you're right. But New York is a fire at will state, as I keep learning. Isn't that right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, okay. Hey, John, you've set the tone. You've raised the issues. We thank you, and good luck. Good luck on your trip down to White Plains. Thanks again.
Thanks, Alan.
Bye bye.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bye bye.
Okay. And now we'll go to Abigail in Kingston. It leaves a free phone, 1-800-348-2551. Abigail in Kingston, you're on.
Buenos dias, Alan.
Buenos dias, but you better get closer to the phone because it sounds...
Oh, really? You can't hear me? Uh-oh. Maybe I'm too close. I had somebody brought me a speakerphone, so I don't know.
No, don't do it on the speakerphone.
I have to do it. This is the only phone I have.
Okay, that's rule number three. Okay, but go ahead.
Okay, so first thing. If we look at the word community, the middle of the word is unity. Now, that's wonderful. And that is a community of like-thinking people, which can be problematic, can be useful, whatever. So my father was an ILGWU union member, and he also carried Paul Robeson's piano onto the stage in Fishkill. So I guess unions are in my DNA.
Everything isn't the same, Abigail.
I mean,
remember, we just all read our Times.
Everything's the same. The only constant is change. We know that. All right, so I'm a member of UUP. I just want to tell you, I really like what you're doing on the show. I loved this morning's talk on space.
Right.
Because when I was teaching at SUNY New Paltz, I used to put the word space, on the board.
Yeah.
And I'd have the kids free write. And I would say, I'm not talking about outer space. What does it mean? And anyway, I used to teach metaphor. And
Abigail,
I got to stop you.
I have to stop you because that phone really stinks. And you've called here many times, and your voice is always as clear and pristine as possible. So we really can't have you using that phone. So you need to have...
So I got to get another phone?
Yeah, you want to call here, you got to have another phone. Abigail, we love you, but not today.
All right, take care, be well, and keep up the good work.
Okay. A bientôt. Okay, let's go to David in Cambridge. David in Cambridge, you're on.
Hi. Hello. Doctor, we have... I always, usually, when I call a show, I usually just kind of say, I'm the guy who called you last week about the Jeopardy and the 2,000-year-old man, and I usually leave room for the other callers because, frankly, they're you've got some damn good callers that call in the show.
We have wonderful callers, and they're so smart, and you are too, David, but go ahead.
The guy that preceded, the guy at the top there, talking about unions in general, and, of course, I'm sure he's heard of the IWW and Big Bill Hayward.
Sure.
And I'm calling as a provocateur, I suppose. Although I've been a member myself, a local union number 13 as a musicians union. And by the way,
James C. Petrillo, president.
Actually, there was a fellow back in Mardi named Arap who actually did smoke cigars and drive around the Cadillac.
David, because there are a lot of people behind you, others. Go ahead. What do you want?
Okay, but I do remember the histories. My friend's grandmother, who bought a car 40 years ago, and there was a rattle in the door caused by a beer bottle. And you've heard the saying about never buy a Monday or a Friday car.
I always thought it was Wednesday, but go ahead.
Well, Friday, they're kind of getting all hooped up, and Monday, they're hungover, I guess, was the rationale behind that. But the things like that start to, and they might be based in some truth, too, but these things tend to gain traction.
Okay, now you need to sum it up in a sentence. Your sentence is, there are good unions, bad people, right?
Well, I suppose it's not as simple as that, because on the union side, you might have some abuse going on one end, and then the management side, you got the Peter principle.
Sure.
So, okay,
well
I'm going to leave room
issues.
Now.
As well as other issues. Hey, David, I really appreciate your call. Thank you.
Good stuff. Thank you.
Thanks, David.
All right, goodbye.
Okay. We're going to take a short, very short break. We'll be right back. So, David and Jim and Jesse and Chuck, you stay right there.
Support for WAMC comes from Ye Olde Warwick Bookshop, Warwick, New York, a Hudson River Valley bookseller specializing in new and vintage books, plus collectibles and curiosities. Open 7 days a week, yeoldwarwickbookshop.com. Smith College Museum of Art, presenting The Eye is a Door, landscape photographs by Ann Winston Spurn, now on view, exhibition-related programs and more, smith.edu/artmuseum for details. Dr. Johanning, Capital District in New York City, specializing for more than 25 years in occupational and environmental health and prevention, including ergonomics, dampness, and mold problems. JohanningMD.com. And Safe Harbors of the Hudson, Newburgh, presenting Afro-Latin jazz musician Arturo O'Farrell, performing in the lobby at the Ritz on Broadway, Saturday, March 29th at 8 p.m., RitzTheaterNewburgh.org.
Well, we're trying to get everybody in here on the Vox Pop. There are a lot of people. They're all five phones are ringing right now. As soon as somebody gets off, you get on. 1-800-348-2551. We go to David in Lee. Hiya, David.
How are you?
Good. Go ahead.
I think the unions have overstepped their bounds.
Okay.
And it's not entirely their fault. I mean, as a union group, you obviously organize to get the best product you can get for your people. But I think that over the years, when times were good, everybody was willing to give them more and more. And since times have been bad, you can't pull any of that back. You can't.
Well, yeah. I mean, for example, David, we all got treated to something. Carnegie Hall was having issues and strike issues. And it turned out that the guys who were working there, the stagehands, get this, were making $400,000.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
And look at Michigan, the issues they've had. Mm-hmm. You can go down a number of states.
So for those people who think we're dealing with demonization and the rest of the unions, I think sometimes we are. But I think sometimes your word overstepped may be true.
Well, the biggest problem, and I've had dealings with unions for years now, is that whenever there's an issue with an employee who's union, it's not like you can say, all right, this is the problem, you've been wrong for this long, and it's done. You have to have one, not one, but two, but three times of this issue before you can actually do anything about it. And then you're going to go to an individual who's going to negotiate for the union people and fight the argument that you can't fire them for the issue. And it drags on forever and a day, whereas in the private sector, you can say, you know what, you've screwed up three times, we're all done, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Well, just help me on this, David, because I don't know. I take it you're talking about municipal unions and other governmental unions, as opposed to, as you say, the private sector, which also has unions. Don't they have rules also?
They have rules, but they're such a different animal that you have to deal with. It's not straightforward anymore. It's not that someone screws up and you can fix it. There's rules in place that you have to fight with over and over and over again, and it drags on for so long that you've dragged everybody else down before you can get it settled.
David, thank you for your call. Appreciate it very much. Appreciate your opinion. Okay, let's go to Jim in Adams, 1-800-348-2551. Go, Jim in Adams.
Good afternoon, Alan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yes, and as everyone has stated, and you have as well, unions are human organizations, associations, so it depends on the people in the union. I've had good personal experiences with unions and very bad ones as well. That's, I guess,
So give me an idea, Jim, of what a bad experience with a union.
Well, I was about to be laid off at the job I had at General Electric many years back, and the fellow who had less seniority than me was being kept there because he was the best buddy of another guy who was an older union member.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to keep him there.
I see.
He was a funny buddy. Yeah. I said, wait a minute, this guy came in after me. How come I'm going on my way up and he's not?
Well, isn't it possible? Now, Jim, don't take this the wrong way.
No.
But isn't it possible you weren't good as good an employee as the other guy?
It had nothing to do with it.
Okay, well, okay.
You're keeping him on because he was someone's buddy.
They
kept me on when I raised the objection, so I guess it wasn't that.
Okay, so that's the bad one. Now, what's the good experience you had with the union?
Unions have done a lot for, you know, workers in general overall, and I've benefited from all these union workers before me that fought so hard on the picket lines and did without and, you know, got better working conditions, better working hours for us.
So somebody said
10 hours 6 days a week or 12 hours 6 days a week.
Yeah,
work week was reduced to 40.
Yeah. Somebody said, Jim, that unions had overstepped. Do you believe that's true?
Yes, and one big example is not a $400 a year stagehand, but
$400,000.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But in the General Electric plant in Pittsfield, they did themselves out of jobs there.
Uh-huh.
When I was working there, I tried to help out by moving a piece of material down to a man who wanted to machine it at his station, and they had material handlers. What are you doing? You can't take his job away from him.
By the way,
if I move the piece of material, the material handler's going to lose his job.
By the way, I used to put my own lavalier on at Channel 13, and that was okay there. But I once was in New York City and tried to do it.
Tried
put
to do
the
that.
Microphone on.
Wham!
I thought they were going to tackle me.
It was. Right.
It was unbelievable. Or as Arlo Guthrie, kidding around, of course, always says, you know, my father wrote The Union Maid. My father wrote, The Ladies' Auxiliary. He said, but how come it takes three guys to carry my guitar into Carnegie Hall?
Yep. So that's it.
So there you go. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate
it. Get it locked up.
Yeah, bye.
Bye.
Let's go to Jesse in Middletown. Jesse in Middletown, you're on.
Oh, yes. Good afternoon, Dr. Shartok. One is that if you're talking about the unions in terms of their self-inflicted wounds is why they're where they are. One, I cite the example of Shanker and what he did at in the Oshville Brown situation, protecting the union itself, but at the same time, what he did to the that community there is a reason why you get the charter schools that gets them out. Another example is that.
Well, let's stop, Jesse, for a minute. Let me see if I get what you're saying. You're saying because the unions have been overprotective of bad teachers and other questionable things. I don't want to put words in your mouth. As a result of that. The quality of education went down, and therefore the unions were largely responsible for the decline of education. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and in two specific points. One is that they protected the racist, and also they protected that incompetent individual. Exactly.
Uh-huh.
And that's what happened when I worked as an environmental chemist for the state of New York, Vietnam, what PEF did. In terms of how it did stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, you get the kind of thing, the collusion of the two, the incompetent and the racist, you protect them, and that's what happened. And that's why you got this problem down in the area that when you start talking about white flight here and property value here, they're down here in where I live at. With the big expose that the New York Times did there. Folks are talking about their own private property. They can move here and saying that they're entitled to not leaving those folks out rather than actually because on this local school kind of situation, the Southeast kind of union work, rather than look at the entire whole.
Yeah.
Talking about changing the whole picture of quality education over the entire state of New York.
Okay, Jesse, I got your point. We have all gotten your point. I really want to thank you for calling. I appreciate it very much. Thanks for calling.
Thank you again.
Yeah, bye. Okay, let's go to Chuck in New Paltz. Chuck in New Paltz, you're on.
Hi, Alan. How are you?
Well, we're good so far.
Okay.
Are you going to spoil it?
I don't think so.
Okay, go
ahead. I'll try not to.
I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
Well, I'm a 26-year Teamster. I'm getting ready to retire.
Yep.
I was a shop steward for 13 years, and I'm trustee in my local for the past 6 years.
Gotcha.
And the union has provided me with a great life. And
what do you do? What do you do for a living?
I was a truck driver.
Okay, gotcha.
And my industry, it's absolutely necessary just from a safety standpoint. When you're not in a union, they push you all the way to the limit to break the law.
Like what?
Oh, the hours of service, safety issues with the trucks.
Right.
You know, things like that. And they will push and push and push and push and push.
Well, there was Jimmy Hoffa. Remember him?
Jimmy Hoffa was the man who brought the National Master Freight Agreement into play. It took him almost 30 years to get it together. It's now pretty much gone because there's only two or three big unionized companies, and that's because of deregulation.
So to you, he was a hero.
Yeah,
I got a theory on A, what happened, and B, where he is?
No.
Okay.
Well, actually, there's a lot of theories and a lot of things, and I could go into it, but it would sound bad.
Well, let me put it this way, Chuck. First of all, I'm really glad you called. But I knew a Teamster biggie, and I don't want to talk about it, but girlfriend's father, who in one night began to talk about some of the methods that were used by the Teamsters against scabs, for example, and other people, and your hair would stand on end.
No doubt.
In terms of axles falling out of trucks.
No doubt. You have to remember that what the American labor movement was faced from the employer sides were using gangsters.
Right.
And then the unions had to kind of use the same thing.
Uh-huh.
And
What about organized crime related to, for example, the Teamsters? We know there have been many allegations about that.
There's a lot more allegations than reality. I won't say it never happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly did, and I'm sure that had something to do with Jimmy's death.
Yeah.
Tony Provenzano and that whole thing.
Yeah.
But they got in there because of what I was just talking about, because they needed them to protect the union members from the employers' gangsters. And, you know, once you get those people involved, it's hard to get rid of them. But I can tell you right now, it just doesn't happen today because of the consent decree. We are so watched by the government that you can't blow your nose without them being on top of you.
But are they as effective as a union?
Some would say no, but, you know, you don't have the guy with the sideways nose coming in and throwing a bus out of the office.
Hey, Chuck, thanks for the great call. I mean, really great. Every once in a while, I just say we have the greatest listeners in the world, and they always bring something important to the table, and you certainly have. And I very much like your even-handedness. Thanks, Chuck. Appreciate
okay,
it.
Okay, have a good one. Bye-bye.
Okay, let's go to Linda in Saratoga. Linda in Saratoga, you're on.
Hi. There has to be some way to create some kind of equilibrium between the 70 or 80% of people who are workers and the much fewer and much more powerful people who own and run the companies. But there are a couple of things which are completely overlooked, especially among younger people who don't remember the struggles. It's only because of unions that we think in terms of the 8-hour day or the 5-day week or the 2-week vacation or health care that was related to employment or pensions or sick leave. There would be no such thing in America for the few people that still have it if it had not been for unions.
No, I agree with you. And I think I said some of that at the beginning, but you're right.
And the other thing that is completely forgotten is the Mohawk Valley formula. And that was a huge public relations effort made on the part of people who were trying to destroy the union movement in America. And it was a public relations effort which demonized unions as people who were trying to destroy the harmony in communities and trying to cause trouble, and they were all criminals, and you know, all they wanted to do was get into fights and ruin the business climate, and you know, it was a very successful thing. The idea of unions, the negative feelings that an awful lot of Americans have about unions, even though they may profit from what unions accomplished, a lot of that
That's
is
true.
Due to the Mohawk Valley formula.
Well, Linda, let me stop you there because there are so many people behind you. But let me ask you this. Don't you think that the unions have resources to do the opposite, to build up unions, to do PR for unions, and with the result that we have so many fewer people in unions today. What's that about?
I think that corporate America is far more powerful now than it was a few generations ago, and the last thing they want is for their workers to be unionized. At the same time, people who joined unions and ran unions didn't take very good care of them. They let the wrong people get in control. They made unsustainable demands, and sometimes they ran industries right out of town. There has got to be more transparency on the part of what corporate people expect from their workers and what workers expect in fairness. And the situation we have now is terrible. People are working terrible long hours. They're not getting paid for overtime.
So I'm sorry for cutting you off, but don't you think, Linda, that there comes a point at which when that gets to be too powerful, we get unions again?
Why can't there be some kind of equilibrium? Why does it have to be all one way or all the other way?
I don't know. Why don't you tell me?
Yeah, I hope it's not because of human nature, but I think there are countries in which, you know, for example, after World War II, we insisted that German corporations put workers on their boards, and they have a lot less labor acrimony, whatever it is, in Germany than they have. You've got to allow the people who are doing the work to have some kind of a voice in what's happening in their lives.
But we've discussed this so many times. Won't they protect irrational protections against maybe a worker who's not doing a good job?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. So, you know, it is a balancing act. Linda, thank you for the call. Appreciate
You're welcome.
It. Do you teach this stuff?
No.
Sound like you do. Thanks an awful lot.
Okay,
appreciate
bye.
It. Bye. Okay. Let's go to Leah in Ulster. Leah, you're on.
Boy, you had such good callers. My point's going to sound a little pedestrian.
But you're so right. They have been great callers. Go ahead.
Two things. Thing one, I think that now that the benchmark is a 40-hour work week, an 8-hour day, and so on and so forth, your complaint about your friend who works more than that, that unions, in fact, created that environment where
right.
we can now complain about those relatively small difficulties compared to what unions were trying to pull us back from at the time when unions really mattered.
True.
And I think that there's no sense of urgency. There isn't enough of a sense of urgency about those issues.
So do you think, Leah, do you think it returns? Do you understand what I'm saying? In other words, as things get worse, as more people take advantage, as in colleges where so many faculty members are not, you know, are not protected because they're part-time.
Barely compensated.
Yeah, barely compensated. You know, a full-timer may make $100,000. A part-timer may make $12,000. I mean,
right.
Don't we get to a point where things get bad enough so that somebody starts to reorganize?
Yes, in individual industries, like part-timers in college environments, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
But it's going to have to, you know, those things, I think, have to grow out of the particular difficulties attendant to those jobs.
And how do we stop the garbage from happening?
Here's the thing, the other point, and to some degree, that I wanted to make.
Sure.
You know, I think that part of the problem is to try and get to the issue as it is today. My opinion about the problem is that people get elected to be union representatives. If they want to continue to be union representatives, they have to get something for the people they represent. And I think that the tweaking got to the point where it became the arguments that we now hear about protecting employees who, in fact, are not good employees.
Well, what about that?
And so on and so forth. And that it grew out of this need by the people who got elected to be union reps, because they liked the job and wanted to continue to be union reps.
But that's
true. Is there a way to make that work better?
Yeah, but that's true about politicians, and it's true
about
everybody.
Union. I understand.
Right.
But today we're talking about unions.
We are talking about unions today. Leah, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Bye.
Okay. Let's go to take a break, and we'll be right back. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. Bernadette, Joe, Michael, and Mark, stay right there.
Support for WAMC comes from Curtis Lumber, working to support their communities through their Pet Connection sponsorship and by providing professional consultations to homeowners and contractors. CurtisLumber.com. Elms College, Chicopee, Massachusetts, working to educate students with their core values of faith, community, justice, and excellence. Elms.edu. Friends of Chamber Music presenting the St. Petersburg String Quartet Saturday, April 5th at 7 p.m. in the Kiggins Hall at Emma Willard School in Troy, New York. 518-273-4843 for tickets. And Berkshire Co-op Market Great Barrington, offering organic and local groceries, working to build a healthy and sustainable community. Berkshire.coop.
I told you, seconds, and we're back. Bernadette in New Paltz. Okay, Bernadette, you're on. Go ahead.
Yeah, I like what everybody's saying, and they're good phone calls. But what I wanted to add to it is that back in the 20s, when I went to college and I was trying to be a teacher, you didn't have unions, and the teachers were getting paid terrible salaries. The
well, you have a pretty, you have a pretty.
We're not getting paid well.
You have a pretty young voice for somebody
well,
who was
nice.
Working in the 20s. Go ahead.
Well, I'm 60, so. But the thing that I saw were that there are a lot of teachers that had been teaching for short periods of time that were being let go because the superintendents wanted to save money for the school systems, and you didn't have the protection. But now what I find and what I like about unions is that they draw quality people to the professions.
How do you know that? How do you know that?
Because I mean, it's a lot you harder to get a job as a teacher. It's a lot harder to get a job. There's more competition. They're going to look for somebody who's good at what they do. Mm-hmm. And I think that a person who has gone to school and is good at what they do, has got their master's in education, is more likely to say, I want this job because I'm going to get paid well, it's secure, and mm-hmm. I feel appreciated at what I do. It's like any profession. The person who gets paid well is going to be the best person for that job.
Yeah, but wait, Bernadette, what if they're stinky? In other words, what we have people, we all know it. We've all had teachers who aren't good.
Right.
We've all
right.
had great teachers also, by the way. Then isn't it there a problem in terms of a principal, a well-meaning young principal, I know several of them, coming along and saying, hey, I'd like to get rid of them. And the union comes back and says, oh, well, you can, but you have to keep everything in triplicate and you have to be in there every day. And I have to be observed 10 times and I have to do all of this stuff. I mean, I'm overstating
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
But isn't that the other
you
side?
You make that point quite a bit. But when you're in the profession, what uh-huh. I've seen
I'm
is
in the profession.
That, and it's from my son growing up, too, what I've seen is that you have better teachers, especially younger teachers coming in. They're just better at what they do. They're more dedicated. It's a lot harder to get a job as a teacher, especially
yeah.
in New York
right
today
now,
than it
yeah,
used to be.
It is. It is.
Right. And older teachers, I agree that were my age when they started out. A lot of them, they were some of the worst teachers I've ever seen. But the profession of the unions have brought about a change where there's a better, there's more potential, I think, for schools when you have better teachers.
What do you do for a living?
Right now I'm not working. I was trying to start up a nonprofit in New Paltz, but
okay.
I substitute taught for 3 years and then I stopped because I wanted to stay at home with my son, take care of him.
Yep, yep.
Hey, but even just, I had a lot of frustrations. When I, with my son, he was a straight-A student, he was gifted, and it was very frustrating with some of these older teachers that just didn't want to bother, and that's part of what you're talking about is the lack of incentive because there's too much protection mm-hmm. with unions. But what I like about unions is that there are better police officers and better teachers and better people in the profession.
Okay. Hey, Bernadette, I'm not sure I fully agree with you, but I can tell you one thing. You're not all wrong. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it.
Yep.
Okay. Let's go to Joe in Saugerties. Joe, you're on.
Hey. Hi, Alan. How are you?
Hi, Joe.
I wanted to make a comment more than trying to solve any real issue. Many years ago, I was with the Teamsters.
Right.
I was a driver.
Right.
Because I had a college education, I was asked to come in the office. So between driving and in the office, I did a stint for about 18 years with one company. And
in the office, in the company, not the union, right? I just want
yeah,
to make
in
that
the,
point.
In
okay.
the,
in,
right, right, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. In the with the company, yeah. And then anyway, I went and did a couple of other transportation type things, and I got a job with a very big national trucking company, again, in a supervisory position, management, and very progressive company. Teamsters, all the drivers are Teamsters, all the office personnel are not. And yet, I remember going to a training session in down in the South where they have their corporate headquarters, and the president of the company came in. He always would come in to talk to the classes. And one thing that he said to us was, we, unless you really, really do something bad, I'm talking, now he's talking non-union. He says, unless you do something that's really, you know, off the wall, we try not to fire anyone. He says, because we look at it this way, we are a giant bus. If we allow you on the bus, because they don't hire very quickly, they really do the background. If we bring you on the bus, it's because there's something that we value in you. And if you don't do well in sales, we don't fire you. We just put you in a different seat in the bus. And that was their philosophy. They were very careful who they hired, but once they hired someone, it wasn't this, you know, I don't care for you, your attitude, this, that, the other thing, you're out the door. Mm-hmm. They would find, like he said, another seat on the bus.
But of course, people have been surprised, employers have been surprised when they hire somebody, and it turns out they're psychotic or something like that. I mean,
yeah.
Shouldn't you have the right at that point of the game to say, hey, you know, we don't need this?
Well, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. And that's more, I'm sure that's one of the reasons why they keep their management non-union and, you know, all the office help non-union.
Sure.
But the drivers are union. And yet, over the years, because I was on the other side
sure.
of the fence, if you will, over the years I have noticed, and myself included, the management was not hostile towards
mm-hmm.
the drivers.
Mm-hmm.
And as such, we had drivers who did not do, quote-unquote, union things because their job, they felt, was to protect their job, to protect the company, and make sure that we, you know, that we were still around tomorrow. Because if you have followed the transportation industry, trucking companies are going out of business right and left, right and left.
Indeed.
And the ones who lose the most are usually the Teamsters because out the door they come, and when they come back in, they don't come back in as Teamsters.
Interesting.
So,
hey, Joe, I'm so sorry not to give you more
time. Anyway, I'll let you go.
Yeah, but everybody's online, Michael and Mark
yep,
and Susan
I hear you.
Nancy. Thanks
I hear
a lot.
I appreciate the time.
Yeah, bye. Let's go to Michael in Schenectady. Michael.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
A couple quick points. First one, people who don't realize the financial downfall of areas like our area where sometimes as many as 50% of the working population is employed by the state,
yep.
that baby boom generation, which is now retires, and those funds need to be to keep their retirement going, it's a huge, huge burden that no one wants to really talk about because it's so scary. Secondly, I only have my own experience to speak about. The state workers that I have met, I'm not saying this about all of them, one of an ex-girlfriend of mine told me about the fact that, you know, state workers have to work 38.4 hours, and that's it. And she was told when she got to her office that you either work here or don't work here. And I think that that type of mentality, that type of waste, and considering our situation.
I don't get it. What do you mean work here or don't work here? I don't get that. What does that mean?
You will always be employed here. You can either work or don't work.
Oh, I see. Gotcha. Okay, good.
I could have been a little bit more clear there.
No, that's okay.
I think that kind of mentality is what people are really just sick and tired of. Mm-hmm. And that's what they're so working so hard to protect. If you look at the legal fees associated with these groups, if you follow that money, you will find out where the real heart of this problem is. And it's about the money and the shadow that looms over our society when the baby boom generation is fully retired and we don't have the funds to back those retirements. That's a scary proposition, and nobody's talking about it.
Okay, Michael, thank you for the call. Thank you for making your point. Appreciate it. All right, let's go to Mark in Schenectady. Mark in Schenectady, you're on.
Hi, Alan.
Hey.
It's a pleasure speaking with you.
And with you, Mark. Go ahead.
I'm going to be probably the one who's going to you won't like in relation to how I feel about unions. And just to correct the last caller, my wife has worked for the state of New York in the health department for many, many years, and they have taken hits by this current governor in relation to furloughs, in relation to benefits and retirement, all right, over the last, not only this governor, but the governor before him, all right, that unions have been taking now for 25 years, all right? This whole notion is ridiculous, that unions get this high pay and don't work. Let me tell you something. When 9/11 happened, when the floods hit New York City, the first people that went down there, one of the first people were the public servants who went down and did their job, all right? They were all union people, all right? And we forget about those people. We forget about the people when they were retired, like what happened in another state, I can't think of the state, when a governor took away their benefits just for teachers and firemen who risked their lives every day just because they were union. This demonization of unions is ridiculous.
Okay, you made
it's
a point,
absurd.
Mark. You made a point. We're trying to get everybody in. We thank you for doing it, and I respect your opinion. Appreciate it. Okay, and let's go to Susan in Williamstown. Okay, Susan, you're on.
Yes, hi. I would like to talk about the unions in hospitals as far as the nurses go.
Sure.
It's very helpful to have a union because it helps with patient safety.
So you think, because I have a very big interest in what you're saying. You're saying without the unions, there would not be the discipline that you need in a hospital.
Well, they would, for example, if you worked an eight-hour shift during the day and someone called out for the evening, then that same nurse would be working the evening shift, so that would be overtime. And how many people want a very tired nurse taking care of them? Mm-hmm. Because that's when many, many mistakes happen. Mm-hmm. So that protects both the patient and the nurse.
And what does the union have to do with that?
Because they fight for that.
They fight,
for not having the overtime.
Okay, so if a
nurse
doesn't
full-time 8 hours.
Yeah, I got it, okay.
The other part is bullying in nursing. That's a huge, huge thing that I think the public isn't aware of.
Who does the bullying?
It's what's called lateral bullying, where one nurse picks on another nurse,
okay,
or your supervisor.
Uh-huh.
And the supervisor has to go through channels to get rid of a nurse that she may not care for.
So Susan, they protect. I'm just trying to get to the heart of this. So that the unions protect people from being exploited in that way.
Yes, and if you're a bad nurse and you make a lot of mistakes, then the union, I mean, they track of it, and so you don't have dangerous nurses working because.
Wait a second, because this is something that I haven't heard that much about. I'm interested in what you're saying. You're telling me that the union, if they recognize that somebody is a bad nurse, they won't protect that bad nurse.
No. If the supervisor decides, if your immediate supervisor or your manager of your unit decides that she doesn't care for you and she wants to get rid of you, she can't just tell you to go. It has to go through a process, and you have to have a certain amount of warnings, and in each time that the union will be in on that. So it's
but isn't that part of the problem, Susan, that the unions protect people by all of these many, many layers of bureaucracy before you can get rid of somebody who's bad?
Well, I think it helps to keep it fair. Because at one time I was
I hear you.
I was a victim of my supervisor, and for the only reason is because he took a dislike to me.
Yeah.
And because I spoke up for my patient.
Yeah.
That's the reason. I was advocating for my patient. He didn't like that, and he wanted to get rid of me.
Yep.
So because it was against what he thought. So
it is a balance. So it's a balancing act, right, Susan?
Yes. Yeah. So it's just not. They keep on nurses that aren't experienced. And, because of the union, that's not true.
Yeah.
But in nursing, also, experience is golden.
No, I get
older nurses are golden as far as the new ones coming in.
Susan, the last thing I want to do is be rude, but we got four people behind you.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, okay. Sure.
Let's go to Nancy in Millerton. Okay, Nancy, you're on.
Hi. All right. So while I appreciate a lot of the things that unions have done over the years, about 3 or 4 months ago, I'm a singer-songwriter doing my first CD, and I tried to hire a violin player.
Uh-huh.
And she was a union player. I said, that's fine. I will pay you union scale. I don't have an issue with that. Well, it turned out it was $60 an hour for a minimum of 2 hours. Again, I had no issue with that. The issue I had, though, was that she was allowed to work no more than 15 minutes in an hour. It was stated in the contract.
In her contract.
In her contract.
But you mean all musicians can only work 15 minutes in an hour? I've been to so many union musician affairs where they play.
It was
for
the state of Connecticut. That's all I know. I couldn't tell you. I don't know about all the rest of them. I do know about this one woman. And I'm good to people. I feed them. I make sure they get breaks. I make sure they do all kinds of things, get air, do whatever they need to do. But if I need you to work for half an hour, then that's what you need to do to get the job done. So it would have cost me $240 an hour by the time it actually, for 1 hour's work.
Well, assuming that what you're saying is right, and that's an assumption, of course, I have to only tell you that's exactly the kind of thing people talk about. Nancy, we're trying to get everybody in.
Yep,
thank you,
Nicole.
Right.
Thanks, bye.
Okay, let's go to Johnny in Tilson. Johnny in Tilson, you're on.
Hey, Alan.
Hey.
I just wanted to give you my own personal anecdote about being a CSCA member some years ago.
Yep.
I worked in the maintenance department at a state university. I'll just leave it at that. And, I was brought up to be a conscientious worker or whatever. And so, you know, I got there. Of course, I wanted to do my best. And, like, there was this informal training process that I had to go through to learn how it's done, you know, if you're a CSCA worker, in the sense that, you know, they kept telling me, slow down, because I was making them look bad. If I could do something in a half hour that they've always taken an hour to do, that's no good. So, you know, it was really something. I mean, it took a matter of months to kind of learn the tricks of the trade, more or less.
I hear you. I have no reason to doubt you. I can tell you I know a lot of CSEA workers. I worked with them in New Paltz and other places who really worked their tails off. So it's not everybody, is it?
I don't know. I know that in the maintenance department, that's how it was. I don't know about the rest of the places.
Yeah.
But,
Johnny,
I mean, it was really interesting, though, because it was almost like another world. My boss, if we complained about something, he would say, hey, if you were on the outside, you know, and so they actually would, you know, it was referred to like this is this world and then there's the outside world. And, you know, you've got it good here. So, you know, don't complain.
Johnny, thank you. Again, only because it's the end.
Sure,
I have two
sure.
more minutes. Thanks a lot.
Great.
Let's go to Jerry in Schenectady. Jerry, you're on real quickly.
Okay, Alan. To go back to your question, is why there seems to be an effort to get rid of unions. Just a reminder that unions are one of the few types of organizations on the left that just partially counterbalance all the money of the super PACs on the right in our high-cost elections nowadays.
Well, I think that's true.
Pardon me?
I think you're right.
Yeah. So don't you think that's one of the major reasons why companies want to eliminate them?
Well, no, because if you've got a union and they insist on more money for their workers so that people get paid, and other reasons, another good reason to get rid of them, isn't it?
Pardon me?
It's another good reason to get rid of them because
there's multiple reasons.
Yeah. Jerry, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Al.
Okay. Let's go to Renee. Real quickly, Renee, you got one sentence. Go ahead. One sentence.
Okay, I just moved here from Detroit, and I've had some run-ins with the UAW.
Uh-huh.
One thing in particular was a few months ago, a woman who turned 80 worked for the UAW in a plant in Toledo and was responsible for just very light work cleaning the bathrooms. She wasn't even mopping floors.
No, you got to hurry. We're out of time. Go ahead.
Anyway, okay, she was making over $80,000 a year because she had been there for a long time.
Yep. Renee, thank you.
Bad management creates bad unions.
I got you.
Okay,
thanks
Alan. Bye-bye.
And I am really sorry. We're not going to be able to take Jim from Hartford's call. We are out of time. And thank you, everybody. It was a great show. I didn't know what to expect when we started it, but boy, you were there. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Mohonk Preserve. New Paltz presenting the Rock the Ridge 50-Mile Challenge for runners, walkers, hikers on May 3rd. Sponsored by I Love New York and Ulster County Alive. RockTheRidge50.org for registration. And Subsidian Technologies, working to help enterprises use custom communications and cloud services to help improve information technology environments. SubsidiumTech.com and the Linda the American Root Series at the Linda presents Tim Erickson and the Trio D Bumpertown. Saturday, March 29th at 8 p.m. TheLinda.org. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Remember, the conversation continues online at WAMC.org/VoxPop. Our engineer has been the incredible, well-spoken Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Bruce Herbach, who really knows what he's doing. Our producer is the wonderful Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now, everybody, for a news update.